Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Crime Ghoul, a true crime podcast where I'm your host, Brittany, and welcome back to another Ghoultober-themed episode. So I'm really soaking in all the spookiness I can, all of the Halloween that I can, and I hope you're doing the same because, man, these holidays just come and go so quickly. So really grab hold of that and enjoy it. But for today's episode, of course, it is extra spooky, it's extra creepy, and it is graphic. So listener discretion is heavily advised. You have been warned. But without further ado, let's get to it. Go brew yourself a cup of coffee, pour yourself a glass of wine, or perhaps take a shot of whiskey. Because as always, these true crime cases are not for the faint of heart. Thank you so much for listening. Okay, friends, today's case is all about H.H. Holmes, and he's often referred to as America's first serial killer. He's known for his murder castle in Chicago, and he used bodies to profit, and he didn't care who he stepped on to gain success. This is the true story of H.H. Holmes. So before he was known as H.H. Holmes, he was known as Herman Webster Mudgett. That's right, Herman, Hermie. Herman. That's just a funny name. Anyway, he was born in May of 1861. He was born in Gilmanton, New Hampshire, and he was the youngest of three siblings. His parents were both devout Methodists, very holy roly, and they strongly believed in the Bible. His father was from a farming family, and he was also known as a local drunk, and he cruelly mistreated his family. Herman was extremely close to his mother, and he was often referred to as a mama's boy. Herman was a thin boy with blue eyes and brown hair, and he faced so much bullying during his childhood. He was a really smart boy, and his classmates, they bullied him for this. His classmates thought he was really odd, and he always kept to himself and usually avoided his peers. So he had one friend named Tom. Tom was a little bit older than him, and he would die tragically, so it's really sad, Herman's only friend. So one day, Tom and Herman were hanging out, and they decided to explore this abandoned house. And once inside, they made their way to an upstairs landing, and that's when Tom plunged to his death from that landing. Herman saw the whole thing, and he was so close, like so physically close, like he could have reached out and touched him, but he had been right behind Tom when this happened and witnessed the whole thing. Herman lost his only friend. The bullying continued for Herman, and one morning, two older boys waited until the village doctor was away from his office. Then they brought Herman inside of the office with them, and when they were in there, there was this full-size, like, adult skeleton, and they forced the skeleton fingers onto Herman's face, and he cried hysterically. He was so terrified, and the boys eventually let him go and left him screaming and crying on the floor. Herman later said that he believed that this horrifying moment had something to do with his lifelong interest in anatomy. At 11 years old, Herman was conducting secret medical experiments on frogs, salamanders, rabbits, kittens, and even stray dogs. People around town knew he was weird, but I'll give it to him. He didn't care. He kept being creepy, and he kept doing creepy things. He really just ignored the opinions of others. In 1878, Herman married a woman named Clara Lovering, and together they had a child named Robert Lovering Mudgett. And Clara came from a wealthy background. Some people believe that they only married because they had a child together, and of course, having a child out of wedlock was very frowned upon back then. Needless to say, Clara's family wasn't a huge fan of Herman. They thought he was poor and lazy. And within 2 years of the marriage, Herman abandoned his wife and son, and while he was still legally married to Clara, he married a woman named Myrta Belknap. In the meantime, Herman went on to college, and first he went to Vermont for about a year, and then he transferred to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. He graduated with a medical degree by 1884, and by then, Herman was a con artist. He had learned how to trick insurance companies, and he was conning them out of thousands and thousands of dollars. He would take out life insurance policies on fake people, and he would acquire a corpse through grave digging or murder. He would claim that corpse as the fake insured person, and then he would cash in on the policy. And around this time, many people stated that Herman smelled bad. He had this awful odor, and I can't help but wonder if it was a result of him messing with these corpses and handling the dead. By 1886, Herman changed his name. He became Dr. Henry Howard Holmes, or H.H. Holmes. He named himself after the famous Sherlock Holmes. By this time, Holmes had a glow up. He went from being smelly and strange to incredibly desirable. He was 5'7 and weighed about 150 pounds, and he had this really nice long mustache, and we love mustaches over here. He was swift with the ladies, and it is said that he knew how to flirt, and he was very seductive. He also changed up his style and really became a well-polished man. Women thought he was incredibly handsome. He became a druggist's assistant, and while working here, Murda became pregnant with his child. And Murda was very possessive over Herman. She was not happy that women were going into the store and would grow angry if they even talked to Herman. Which is wild, because of course women are going to go to the store and buy what they need, and of course Herman's going to be there and they're going to talk to them. But eventually Herman was so fed up with Murda's behavior that he had her work upstairs and take care of all of the bookkeeping. The drugstore was owned by an elderly widow named Holton, and one day Mrs. Holton randomly disappeared. Customers would ask what happened to her, and Holmes would say that she had gone to California to visit relatives. And I don't know about you guys, but at this point, Herman is looking sus. One could only wonder if he was responsible for her death, and I wonder if he was even responsible for Tom's death. Could that be his first kill? Maybe. Anywho, by 1887, Holmes became the new proprietor of the pharmacy. So the profits built up quickly, and he also had his side hustle scams on the side. He used the money to construct a luxury new residence for himself on a vacant lot across the street from the drugstore. And on the outside, this place looked gorgeous. But on the inside, there was a labyrinth realm of madness and horror. It's kind of ironic because this resembled Holmes himself. He looked great on the outside, but on the inside, he was a dark, depraved monster. Holmes went on to name his new home the Castle, and it contained over 100 rooms linked by secret passageways, fake walls, concealed shafts, and trapdoors. Some rooms were soundproofed and padded with asbestos. Peepholes were in the doors, which allowed Holmes to spy on people. Many of the rooms were equipped with gas pipes that were connected to a large tank in the cellar. Holmes was able to fill any room with gas, and he had a control panel from his office. Each room had an alarm, so if anyone escaped, Herman would know. Like, that is just terrifying. This is just next level. But chutes ran from the second and third floors of the building to the basement, where Holmes kept a laboratory. And this was complete with a dissection table, surgical instruments, and an oven large enough to accommodate the human body. Crazy enough, Herman did not pay to have his castle built. Could you imagine? I don't know. This is crazy. But he refused to pay the architect and the steel company. He would lie and con and say, "Oh yeah, I paid you already. I'm not paying you again." But in all actuality, he never paid anyone. So they took him to court in 1892, and nothing ever came of this, which is just absolutely bonkers. But in 1892, Holmes added a third floor, and he would tell investors and suppliers that he would use this floor as a hotel during the World's Fair. The crazy thing is that Herman was the only person to know the true layout of this hotel. He had so many people work on this building that there was no way any of them could know the full scope of the blueprints. Herman also had a basement of horror within this building. He did not mind getting his hands dirty when it came to disposing of his victims. And once the bodies were in the basement, he placed them in many vats of acid and quicklime pits. He also had several operating tables, cabinets filled with surgical instruments, and a large kiln that could fit an entire body, which he used to cremate his victims. He also had a medieval rack, and this is just wild. He later referred to this instrument of torture as an elasticity determinator. That would be used to stretch out the human body, you see. Some theories suggest that this was part of his own scientific experiment because he wanted to kickstart a new race of giants. Yeah. I just have no words. But another theory claims that he would torture victims with this instrument until they revealed details about their finances. When detectives eventually discovered the basement of horrors, they found one vat of acid still containing a human skull and 8 ribs that had not fully dissolved. Yeah, this basement is just, ew. Can you imagine stumbling upon this basement? I can't. So Holmes built the hotel to lure in tourists visiting the World's Fair in order to kill them and then sell their skeletons to nearby medical schools. And you see, nobody asked questions because at this time, skeletons were high in demand. Schools were really struggling to get them. So the fact that they had a constant supply coming from H.H. Holmes, they were happy. Many people believe that this murder castle was huge. However, many accounts state that the third floor hotel was moderately sized and largely unremarkable and incomplete due to Herman's conflict with the builders. The hotel did contain some hidden rooms, but they were used for hiding furniture Holmes bought on credit and did not intend to pay for. Holmes's usual murder method was by suffocation or an overdose of chloroform and overexposure to lighting gas fumes. He had also trapped victims in an airless vault, killed them by starvation, or even burned them alive. This guy's just, he's out of control. But Herman's monstrous hotel was terrifying, and many people didn't know that once they checked in, they would never leave. Many people disappeared from the murder castle, and one person in particular was Herman's secretary. Young Emmeline Sigrand relocated to Chicago after Herman offered her a position as his personal secretary that paid three times the average salary for this line of work. So she arrived with $800 in savings, and it wasn't long before Holmes managed to get his hands on this money. Of course, this slippery mother suck. But he claimed that he would invest it well, and she believed him. Emmeline did not like how things were going after a little while, so she told a neighbor that she was heading back home, and that was the last time anyone had ever seen her alive. On the third floor of the murder castle, Herman installed a soundproof, airtight vault, and it was lined with steel and equipped with a gas flame, which he claimed was there to provide a light source. Yeah, okay, Hermie. But by blowing on any of the air pipes connected to the vault, Holmes could extinguish the gas flame, and anyone unlucky enough to be trapped inside would quickly suffocate. A female footprint was later discovered etched into the door of the vault. Holmes had lured Emmeline into the vault, and she was shoeless at the time, perhaps even nude, and Holmes had closed the airtight door and locked her inside. She had left the print in a last-ditch effort to force the door open. It's believed that Holmes had poured acid onto the floor of the vault to hasten the consumption of oxygen, and the theory is that Emmeline stepped in the acid and kicked at the vault door in a final attempt to save her own life. I just can't even imagine being stuck like that, and then him pouring acid on the floor. Like, this guy is just unhinged. Many horrors took place in the murder castle. Two women named Minnie and Nanny Williams became the victims of Herman. Minnie was hired as Herman's stenographer, and Minnie confided in Holmes and told him that her deceased father left her with real estate in Fort Worth, Texas. So of course his grubby hands is like, real estate. So he conned her into falling in love with him, and mind you, he was still married to Murda, at this time. And you know what's crazy? Like, he didn't even get a divorce from Clara. Yeah, the one from the beginning of this story, so I just can't. But anyway, he kept Murda and his daughter far away from the murder castle, so they didn't really know what was going on. But then, nevertheless, he convinced Minnie to sign over her real estate to one of his many aliases. And he also convinced her to give him her money, and she did. Eventually, Minnie's sister Nanny came to visit her and Herman. Herman would go and pick up Nanny from the train station that day, and he brought her to the hotel where he tricked her into grabbing a file for him, and he actually locked her in his airtight vault. Nanny left claw marks in the vault from trying to scratch her way to freedom. Holmes decided to kill Minnie by chloroforming her in her sleep, and he then threw her body into the cellar. But that wasn't the end of the Williams family. Herman knew that they also had a brother named Baldwin, so he came up with an idea to take out a life insurance policy on Baldwin and made the sole beneficiary Minnie Williams. So he tracked down Baldwin in Oklahoma, where he poisoned him to death and then claimed the life insurance. Wild. Absolutely insane. So Holmes had a lot of terrifying rooms, but one of them was a trap room. Once the unknowing victim was in the room, they would find that the room had no doors and no lights and could only be accessed through a trap door in the ceiling, which obviously the victims didn't know about. The room was also soundproof, and he would leave victims to starve to death in the dark. All around the house, there were grease chutes leading to the basement, which he could use to dispose of bodies or push the living down these chutes to his crazy basement. So it was down in this basement where he carried out some of his most gruesome acts. And this brings us back to the basement of horror. He had a dissection table and surgical equipment to strip the flesh from their bones and carve out their insides. The depraved Holmes would craft the leftover bones into skeleton models and sell them to medical schools, along with organs and other body parts. The corpses and body parts he couldn't sell were incinerated in the basement's ovens, or dissolved in vats of acid, or buried in lime pits. Many of his victims had traveled from out of town for the 1893 Chicago World's Fair, and this made them perfect targets, because if anyone came asking about them, Holmes could just say that they checked out and left. Holmes didn't just murder adults, mind you. He killed children too. He did not discriminate, and no one was safe once they entered this hotel. Word soon got around that Holmes was not to be trusted. He had gained a reputation of purchasing goods from creditors and failed to keep up with the invoices. The hotel itself was furnished in the finest interiors, yet this was all for show because the owner had no intention for paying any of it. And of course, this was not the worst of his crimes, as he was also encouraging his employees to take out life insurance policies. Then when they eventually disappeared, he forged the documents so vast amounts of cash would be left in his name. So again, wild. Not only were guests going missing, but his employees. He didn't care. At this point, he just didn't care. With the body count mounting higher than ever, Holmes also realized that he could cash in on the cadavers. He knew from experience that skeletons were high in demand as medical schools acquired them for their students. And once the business of murder was out of the way, Holmes stripped the corpses of their flesh, bleached the bones, and sold off those skeletons for a good price. So I know I kind of mentioned all of that already, but it was reported that the corpses were sold for $25 to $45 a piece. And back then, that was a lot. And the clean skeletons that he had sold for as much as $200, which for today, that would have been around $20,000. So Holmes befriended a carpenter named Benjamin Pitzel, who also came with his own criminal past. And the two soon became schemers together, and an attorney later described that Pitzel was Holmes's very own creature. And if you're not sure what this is referring to, it's referring to Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And many people remember the monster as being Frankenstein. Like when you think of the tall green guy, a lot of people refer to him as Frankenstein. But that green guy is actually referred to as the creature. Frankenstein was the doctor who brought the dead man back to life. So really, Dr. Victor Frankenstein is the monster for reanimating somebody and ugh. But anyway, I digress. Anyway, Holmes was very much molding Pitzel into what he wanted him to be. So very reminiscent of the creature and Dr. Frankenstein. It is unknown how involved Pitzel was in the murders and selling of the bodies, but eventually he also met the same fate. Again, no one is safe with H.H. Holmes. So Pitzel agreed to fake his own death so his wife could collect on a $10,000 life insurance policy. The money was then to be split between the family and Holmes, as he would stage his death to look like an accident. However, Holmes knocked his friend unconscious with, of course, chloroform. Then he set his friend's body on fire to make it appear like a suicide. Holmes then murdered Pitzel's three children. The twisted serial killer locked the children in a trunk that had a hole drilled on the side and used gas to asphyxiate the young victims. Pitzel's wife would meet the same fate that he did. She was killed by the chloroform and then her body was burned. So this is really reminding me of his friend Tom. See, he didn't even care about his friends. Maybe he killed Tom. Anyway, one man who had been an acquaintance of Holmes had seen news of Pitzel's death and the payment of $10,000 in life insurance. So he wrote a letter to the police stating, quote unquote, "When H.H. Holmes was here some months ago, he told me he had a scheme to make $10,000 and needed a lawyer who could be trusted. He told me he'd give me $500 for introducing him to such a lawyer. I was to get $500 if it worked. It is hardly worthwhile to say I never got the $500 Holmes held out to me for introducing him." Police were now ready to investigate Holmes under murder charges. They tracked him down to Fort Worth, Texas, where he had been planning to create yet another hotel. He was arrested for countless murders and fraud. At first, he tried to claim that he was possessed by the devil, and eventually he was hanged for his crimes. His neck did not snap right away, and instead he was strangled to death by the noose. Before his death, he asked to be buried in 6 feet of concrete so grave robbers could not steal and dissect his body, which I think that's funny because, like, okay, you had no problem doing that to other people, but when it comes to you, no way. Police had found so many horrors in the murder castle. Some rooms that weren't mentioned were his hanging room. He would take victims to this room and hang them. Some rooms had blowtorches hidden in the walls, and Holmes would flip a switch and burn the victim alive. Some other murders that weren't mentioned. Holmes had a mistress named Julia Smith. She became one of Holmes's pharmacy employees. And you see, Julia had a husband and a 12-year-old daughter named Pearl at the time. Holmes impregnated Julia and her husband left her. Holmes wasn't ready to have yet another child, so he performed a crude abortion on Julia and killed her in the process. He then killed Pearl using chloroform. All in all, Holmes is believed to have slaughtered up to 200 people between 1891 and 1894, when he was finally caught and arrested. He confessed to being an evil mass murderer and admitted to 27 killings, although the true figure is thought to be much higher. Holmes is recorded as saying, "I was born with the devil in me. I could not help the fact that I was a murderer, no more than a poet can help the inspiration to sing. And I was born with the evil one standing as my sponsor beside the bed where I was ushered into the world, and he has been with me since." So that, my friends, is the story of H.H. Holmes, otherwise known as America's first known serial killer. And as you could see, this guy, like, at what, you know, I kept wondering, at what point is this dude going to get caught? Because he just cared less and less. He just started killing people. And it didn't matter. The money is what mattered. So yeah, that's it, guys. I don't really know what happened to Clara and his first son. I don't know, like, not many people report upon it, so I guess, like, they were fine. And then Murda and his daughter became a school teacher, and Murda seemed to be fine. And, you know, of course they would find out, like, that their husband was a serial killer, so they dodged a bullet. Luckily he didn't kill them or their children. And yeah, the same can't be said for his mistresses. It's just really incredibly sad. And I know this took place in Chicago, but it really reminds me of that song, Hotel California. You know, you check in, you never leave, whatever. I'm sure this place was haunted as heck. And I didn't mention, but the hotel was burned to the ground, and many people wonder if it was Holmes who did that. It happened right before he fled to Fort Worth, Texas. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's what he did, and he was going to build a new, you know, hotel and hopefully start a new life where people didn't really know him. But okay, folks, let me know what you thought. Feel free to DM me. As always, you're always welcome to do that, or comment on the social media posts that I make about this case. I'd love to hear from you. And until next time, stay safe. Don't trust anybody who tells you to take out a life insurance policy. Really think about that first. And I'll see you next time with Notorious November. So in the month of November, I cover really notorious cases. And I know it's a little interesting. The last two cases I covered for Ghoultober was the Black Dahlia and H.H. Holmes, which are nonetheless notorious. But yeah, we'll get to more modern day cases that are notorious. And yeah, some of them you might have heard from other creators, but definitely if you're interested, take a listen to my take on the cases. So I hope to see you soon, and enjoy the rest of your spooky season, and have a very happy Halloween. Bye.